This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. You can subscribe to the app on Apple and Android. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details. FUBAR!
FUBAR.
I like that.
It's Lucy Porter on the FUBAR. Good afternoon, good evening, early evening. Here we are for our two-hour celebration of women. I have a wonderful studio guest who is sitting to my right. I won't introduce her just yet. Keep you waiting. So let's kick off with something from our album of the week, which is worryingly contemporary. I don't think it's actually from this year. Maybe it is, or maybe last year. But anyway, it is. The album of the week is Jackie by Ciara.
I'm going Ciara?
Ciara?
That's how I read it. But
Ciara.
Ciara.
Right. We don't know how to say a name. It's all started
as
very
down
well.
That we are.
But the album of the week is Jackie, and Amanda is going to tell me which song we're going to kick off with.
I'm
going to
let you choose. Either you can have I Bet or Fly.
I Bet.
I Bet. Okay, here it comes.
The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
Thank goodness that jingle with Ali there is back. Good. So that was. Now I'm going with Ciara. And if anyone wants to tweet in or text in to contradict me, then so be it. But yes, that's our album of the week. Now, I picked that because there's a song on it, which is, I believe, called Jackie, the title track of the album, which is quite sweary. And I thought this is good because FUBAR, you know, we had Peaches Fuck the Pain Away the other week, which was fun. And I thought we may as well make the most of the sweariness of this radio station. So we'll be hearing some sweariness from her later on. Ciara, who has been basically a pop star since she was about 10, supported Rihanna over here on her on one of her tours, and was known as the Queen of Crunkenbee. The Queen of Crunkenbee. At least she was, but the new Queen of Crunkenbee is in studio with me now. We've decided we're going to style you as that anyway. It's the lovely Alison Thea Scott.
Hello.
So if you could just do us a bit of crunk.
Crunking. I can only imagine crunking is some kind of vocal noise that you make with your mouth.
Like a tennis player.
Yes. So Serena Williams would do a lot of crunking.
If you could just crunk throughout the show for
I'll just cue every now and then. Instead of stings.
We have a moment.
She's just crunk. Like a crunk noise.
We're here for the next 2 hours. We're going to be chatting about all manner of things, Alison. So relax and enjoy yourself. Alison, who is an actor, award-winning.
could be true, yeah.
Character. Well, you were awarded that you did a short film.
Nominated. I didn't win, Lucy, but
well,
thanks, though.
Being nominated is probably
being nominated
really.
Is nice. Yeah, that's nice. That's
and
close.
You are also in the radio sketch show So On and So Forth.
Yes, I am.
Which
can
be heard on the BBC's iPlayer facility.
Yes, you can download us.
Able to download now.
Into
yes.
a phone or an iPad.
That's a new thing. And you are taking your character show.
Yes.
Some like it, Thea Scott. you're from the Joe Lycett School of Naming Shows. Joe Lycett's brilliant show. My favourite ever show title, If Joe Lycett, Then You Should Have Put a Ring on It.
Oh, that's brilliant.
It's a brilliant one.
I love a pun. I love a pun.
Yeah.
And although I have told quite a few comedians, obviously, you know, when you're gigging, people are like, hey, what are you calling a show? What are you going to do this year? And when I decided on it, and I kept telling, I would tell the old comedian, they look like they're going to be sick. some people just absolutely hated it. And then you get the reaction of some people who go, oh my God, that's exactly my kind of thing. And I thought, well, that's great, because then if you don't like it, then you won't come, and that's fine. Like, and so
you don't want those poo-faced naysayers in your show.
Oh, yeah. And some people who were like, you got one syllable too many in that. It doesn't work. It technically doesn't work, Ali. That's not the point.
Yes.
So it's just
It's not
fun.
Meant to work.
Not meant to work. So, it's just a bit of character comedy fun.
And were you part of the Cowgate Head fiasco disaster? We've alluded to this on the show before. It's a bit in, so I always feel we should deal with it lightly and briefly. But, there was venue controversy.
Complete, kind of. Shitstorm, really.
Just absolutely. You can say that on FUBAR.
I'm glad I can, because that's how it feels. It was And I don't know. I don't know who was right, who was wrong, what happened. No one got told anything. I think it's almost like when I was listening to Serial and you go, you start understanding the law more, or you get an idea of how grey the law can be.
Yeah.
And I think I'm guessing that's what's happened. I don't know whether anyone had a contract and there's just been people saying, I got it, no, I got it, I got it, no, I got it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you were just collateral damage.
You are. And so where do you have a venue, or are you going to be performing on the Royal Mile in a makeshift tent?
I have a tent. I know. I'm with now under PBH.
Okay. So you're under Peter Buckley Hill. That's an enviable position to be in.
Fragile, vulnerable.
Yes.
So I have the same time, and I'm at Cowgate, and I know a lot of people who did that as well. And it's a bit of a confusing one as an act, because you go, well, I was actually with Freestyle last year, so yes.
This is the first set of people who booked a venue, yeah. And then this other man, Peter Buckley Hill, that he booked it, and then oh my god, it was like awful, and there was like a shouting, and there were three men called Kenny who had all promised things to people, and it was all anyway. It's, you know, this is for those of you who are listening. It is very much as Alison said. It's like Serial. Mm. We will be doing a FUBAR six-part investigation in the course of the Edinburgh Festival. So, but thank goodness you have a home, and you will be doing your show.
Yes,
and
we'll hear
more about it as the evening progresses.
I will quickly, before we do that, I will catch us up on the feedback from last week's show, which was lovely. It was very nice. So last week we had Helen Lederer in, Alison, and it was marvellous. And the wonderful Susan Murray, who you may well know as well, excellent stand-up comedian. We were talking about the fact that Helen had written a book which she has described as midlit. As in literature for middle-aged people, which are very much up my street.
That's great.
And but she was bemoaning the fact that there aren't that many great British female comedy writers. And we all said, oh, yes, oh, isn't that, yes. Mm. And then we appealed for people to send us their favourite female authors, of which we got many at the time, and we have had many since.
Great.
And what's lovely about it is, of course, it has completely disproved our theory that there aren't that many great British female comedy writers, because people have written in with the following suggestions. I can't credit you all, but thank you. You know who you are. Somebody suggested Alison Pearson, Polly Williams, Wendy Holden, whose work I haven't actually read any of them, but I believe they are very funny. Now, and Helen Fielding, which I can't believe we didn't mention Helen Fielding.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
It's insane that we touched on her, but then we never actually gave her the full credit. Her novel Cause Celeb. I mean, I love the Bridget Jones and stuff, and it, you know, at that time I was living that life, and I was like, this speaks to me. But Cause Celeb, if you haven't read that one, it's, I think that was her first novel, and that's an amazingly funny book about celebrity culture and charity, and actually sort of touches on similar areas to Helen Lederer's book as well. So highly recommended. Sue Townsend, hello. Adrian Mole, massive part of my life, incredibly funny writer.
Brilliant.
Really good suggestion here. Marina Lewicka, who wrote a short history of tractors in the Ukraine, which I don't know if you ever read that. And she wrote another follow-up one, which was brilliant as well. I can't remember the name of. Very funny writer. Leonora Carrington, which I'm gutted that I didn't think of. Leonora Carrington was the most amazing woman. And in fact, I've just decided I'm going to do her as my life of the week. Later on, my great woman of the week. So I won't speak of her now. I shall speak of her later, but she's amazing. Muriel Spark, The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie, hilarious book. Memento Mori. Very good. And then someone said Marion Keyes, who is very funny but technically Irish, so there you go. So thank you very much, everyone, for those. And also, we're still having other recommendations for Album of the Week coming in, which I will come to in weeks to follow. So that's all good. So... Oh, and I'm just throwing... Now, I should say, before we start tonight's show, just a little warning. I am having an absolute nightmare of a day of klutziness and dropping.
Good.
So anything can
excellent.
Happen. I haven't even started on
we
the PIMS
even
yet.
Had the PIMS
it's going to be PIMS hour at 7, and who knows what's going to happen. I did a thing today where I was drying my hair, and I had to abort the drying of my hair because I hit myself in the face with the hairdryer so hard... That I was momentarily, I'm not sure concussed, I think I might be overplaying that, but I was in so much pain.
Oh, we're laughing.
And I have no idea how I did it. You know, in this thing, I couldn't recreate that if I tried, but I absolutely properly slapstick style slapped myself right square in the face.
And have you got a real kind of like metallic,
it's a proper
heavy
salon standard?
Yes, salon standard.
I won it in a raffle.
This story gets better and better.
I didn't realise it was a joke hairdryer that will at some point will spring up and attack. But anyway, yeah, so I and then I was on the phone after that, so I was a little bit dazed. And then I was on the phone to some poor woman who she was interviewing me for her dissertation. And anyway, and I was chatting away, and I was feeling, and I told her what had happened. And you know, it's one of those things where when you try and convey it to someone, they go, oh, okay. That's a bit weird. This poor, no, like, 18-year-old girl. Why is this old lady telling me this weird thing? And then we were talking about something, and I said, oh, well, yeah, because we were talking about clothes, like what you wear on stage and stuff. And I went, oh, well, yeah, because, you know, I buy a lot of my clothes from UKIP these days.
The Farage tracksuit. Oh,
and what I meant to say, ladies and gentlemen, was eBay. And somehow eBay became UKIP.
And just don't order anything off UKIP by mistake.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, I wear a lot of purple.
It doesn't come in any colours.
No, exactly. No,
you can't get any colours.
Just good, God-fearing white. So yes, it was,
oh my goodness.
So yes, it's been, you know, anyway, another minor. I also tripped up on the way to the show. Anyway, so yes, that's the warning. It's klutziness and fuckwittery may have end.
And have you expressed that there are not just like one, there's six cans
of PIMS? Yeah, the PIMS hour is going to be busy. You see, we're joined by the excellent Shayla Rose, who's a brilliant singer songwriter.
Yeah,
she's coming in
slightly late.
She'll be here eventually. And when she's here, she will be welcomed with PIMS. And last week we didn't have enough PIMS, and
someone had
to go without. So I felt it's still 3 for a 5 in Sainsbury's, so we're now fully we've got enough PIMS to sink the entire show by the end. So keep listening for that. It's gonna be exciting. Yay. Now we're gonna compile a list. So our list last week was British female funny authors, which then mutated into just British authors generally, and that worked very well, I thought. So we'll come up with a list as the show goes on. I wanted to start off, and I think this may generate a list of sorts. The first story I wanted to talk about was the Liz Kendall. Now, the Labour leadership contest, which is hotting up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I should admit this, I will. I am a Labour Party member. I joined in 2010 in a sort of fit of guilt and shame, and I haven't really paid much attention, I'll be honest. I joined, thought no more about it, and I have been deluged with text messages, emails, phone calls from the Labour Party asking me who I want to be, the next leader, deputy leader, mayoral candidate for London. I am getting very confused. I have no idea now. Is Tom Watson, what's Tom Watson want to be? What does he want to be? He can be, I don't know, I'll let him be.
Just let him do what he wants.
June Sarpong emailed me the other day to tell me how much she likes David Lammy. I was like, it's lovely to hear from you, June, but really. So, yes, it's all been very confusing. But Liz Kendall is one of the front runners. And now, Liz Kendall, I've met when I was on Newsnight, for reasons that we still don't fully understand, a little while ago. And Liz Kendall was also on and reminded me that we'd met because she used to go out with Greg Davies, the comedian.
Did they?
Yes, for many years, I think, they were together. Anyway, and so, but she seems lovely. And I'm sort of, the problem is, of course, I always do that. Who would you like to go for a drink with? Mm. Who seemed the nice, you know, and policies secondary, which I will actually look into it all a bit more deeply before I vote. But anyway, she seems like a very pleasant woman. And she was profiled this week in the Mail on Sunday. And there was a controversy about this particular profile piece, because in it, the journalist asked her how much she weighed.
You're joking.
So it said in this article, they said she maintains her lithe figure by jogging 20 miles a week. And they said, now this is the thing that captured me, and there was some debate about whether male politicians would be asked about their weight. And so, you know, some people made the point, well, yeah, John Prescott and Eric Pickles, people do make fun of them for being fat. But I do think that actually routinely you wouldn't ask a male politician how much they weighed. I just think that is an example of a kind of a slant that wouldn't be applied to male politicians. But he said Slinky Brunette Liz, or Elizabeth Louise, to give her full royal sounding... Slinky.
Slinky.
That's how I look for in a prime minister, is slink. I don't know if David Cameron is slinky.
I just think it's such lazy, lazy journalism. And this is part of a kind of a spate that's coming out at the moment about the kind of the videos of questions asked to Hollywood actresses whether they'd be asked to a male actor. And I just think this is all part of exactly the same. It's underneath everything that's there. When you're being, when there's interviews, when it's an article about a woman, whatever role they're playing, whether it's we've got politics to a Hollywood actress, it's always about, oh, what do you eat? What are you wearing? How often do you exercise this body?
Yeah. To make do you it look have like children? If you do, children. How do you cope? If you don't, why not? You know, all of that, which has come into this leadership campaign as well. Whether someone who's not a mother can really understand what it's like to manage finances. I mean, insane, incredible nonsense. In fact, there was an interesting study that was done, which showed that when female politicians' appearance was discussed. In a blind study, they asked people about different candidates. They basically presented these different candidates and their policies, and with one set of people they discussed the female candidate's appearance, and with the other set they didn't. And they found that if a woman's appearance is discussed, is in any way brought up at all, then her approval ratings dropped. That people kind of did think, oh, actually, it just obviously subliminally makes them go, oh, but she is a woman, and she might be fat. Is she fat? We just don't know, because if she is, we really couldn't. So it does have an effect. And even when the coverage of a woman's appearance was positive, it still made her approval ratings drop. It wasn't like, it was just basically any discussion of a woman's appearance made people take her less seriously, it seemed. Mm-hmm. And it is depressing. It is an unpleasant side of the media coverage of politics. But there was something that appealed to me in it, which was, he goes on to say, after the slinky brunette Liz thing, he says, she looks as good in her clothes. Oh, so she favours clothes from L.K. Bennett and Reese, which are said to be favourites of the Duchess of Cambridge. She looks as good in them as slinky brunette Kate. That's two slinkies.
Two slinkies. That's just bad writing.
Again, it's lazy.
He doesn't know how to describe a woman other than slinky.
Word for link. Oh, yes.
Hello, darling. How am I looking today? You slinky? what do you think of this dinner I've cooked you? Slinky?
Dennis? Every birthday card, my slinky darling.
And he says, in fact, she looks the same weight as the Duchess, about 8 stone. Though when I ask, she slaps me down with a raucous fuck off, adding quickly, don't print that. Well, and good for her for slapping him down. And the more raucous the fuck off, the better, as far as I'm concerned. But it did make me think that's quite a good way of measuring ourselves. Instead of having traditional, stones, pounds, kilograms, whatever anyone works in, Duchess of Cambridge's. That's how I'm going to start to define myself from now on, is the Duchess of Cambridge style. So Liz Kendall equals one Duchess of Cambridge. I used to be a Duchess of Cambridge. I'm now about a Duchess of Cambridge and a quarter, edging up to a Duchess and a half.
Doesn't that make you normal, though?
Actually, yes.
I think that's quite normal, though.
Oh, I'm happy.
I think if you're just a Duchess of Cambridge, I think you're probably quite unhappy.
That's a BMI.
I think that's a low BMI.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas a couple of Duchesses. I'm probably a Duchess, a George, a Charlotte, and a couple of Corgis. I don't really know, but... Anyway,
you're a party.
I am a fun party in Buckingham Palace. So if anyone has any other suggestions for weight measurements, because it's almost like, the way everything used to be described in terms of the size of Wales or double-decker buses or, how many football pitches. Yeah. Exactly that. Mm-hmm. Duchess of Cambridge's.
How many Duchess of Cambridge's?
I'm all I'll have that. That's fine. Oh. So, if anyone wants to text. I mean, that's a difficult one. I'm thinking for you trying to tweet that, Amanda. That's going to be a hard one to tweet. Another list.
In 140 characters.
We'll find
it might
another
be.
List.
But I'll find a way to condense it,
very,
I'm sure.
Very
so.
Lovely. Should we do other women judged by their appearance news?
Yeah, go on. Let's do that.
We always have this as a section, but then it keeps rearing its head. And very much following on from what you were saying, Alison, the actress Emma Thompson has said that women in the film
film industry face greater sexism now than when she began her career. She told the Radio Times that actresses are still judged by their age and appearance. I think it's completely shit, actually, she said. We're really doing the swearing close
yeah,
to ground
good
now.
Girls. Good girls.
She said, I don't think there's any appreciable improvement, and I think that for women, the question of how they're supposed to look is worse than it was even when I was young. So, no, I am not impressed at all. And then Miss Thompson, who plays a 77-year-old prostitute in her latest film. So she's very good for her. She's now playing up to 77. But yeah, this kind of resonated with me in that I think, as we were talking about, you know, now there is much more discussion about, oh, what can you say to actresses? You know, we are having much more of a discussion about sexism, mm-hmm. but I don't know if it is actually getting any better. And in terms of comedy, you know, I've always said, throughout my career, I've always gone, oh, it's getting so much better. Everything's absolutely, you know, it's definitely getting better because that's what you want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you think, well, actually, is it?
Is it? Is it actually? I totally agree. And the fact that we have to have these discussions every day, and there's something that happens every single day, something like this comes out, and you kind of think, when everyday sexism sort of reared its, you know, kind of came up and became quite big on Twitter, and that's fantastic, there's a bit more awareness. I think the word feminism now is not demonised. It seems to be like there's a conversation now, and there's a bit more of a channel of sort of chat about it. But then you look at the news and go, oh no, actually,
it's exactly
the same. It's just that people are maybe a bit more aware of it and I'm wanting to talk about it.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether that actually changes anything.
I mean, you would hope that it is the first step towards, in the same way that, you know, the feminism of the late 20th century started off as what was perceived as nagging humorless feminists, mm-hmm. and then actual change, societal change was wrought through it.
Yeah.
You kind of hope that we're at that. But it is also quite depressing that, because Emma Thompson, who is a, you know, a bright and insightful woman in so many ways and is very sort of politically interested and motivated, that the fact that she is saying, actually, I still think it's worse, even from her point of view. There was another, who was I reading about this week? Someone, Jennifer Lawrence, I think it was, who often is someone we find excellent. And she was saying that it is, and it's so obvious that you would feel it doesn't need to be said, but I think it does. She said, actually, since she's become more successful, people have stopped talking about her weight in terms of casting her for movies. No one kind of says, oh, you should lose a few pounds, or, you know, so that actually, the only way that this will ever change is if women do become powerful and start to call the shots, I guess. But you would think that people like Emma Thompson would, you know, would, if anything, be immune to it. Like, how does she even see it anymore because she is so successful and respected? But the fact that even she is aware of it is quite...
Mm. I think it's good that she does, because then people aren't just sort of shut away in their success and getting the jobs they want, getting the answers they want, and being able to call the shots and just thinking that it's fine and that, well, my situation is fine. She must be able to see it bleeding down and affecting her still, I presume. And I think, and someone in that position who has that exposure and that sort of status within the industry needs to speak out about it and make a point. Who did you mention before a second ago?
Jennifer Lawrence.
Jennifer Lawrence, yes. And oh yeah, and talking about kind of not caring about your weight as you get more powerful. Because wasn't that, I think I saw a quote by Caitlin Moran who said that, where she said, the more powerful I've got and the stronger I've got, the less I give a shit whether I'm in jeans and I've got a tummy or what I've got, what the hell's going on with my body. I'll walk into a room full of men and I won't give a shit because I'm powerful now. And I think that's inspiring when you're at a lower level and you're trying to work your way up into an industry, to try and keep that in your head. And something else someone was saying, you know, the Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, the thing of walking into a room of men and speaking within the first 20 seconds and making sure you make a point, you make yourself known.
Yes.
And even if it's actually a friend, my friend Gabby Best, she's a brilliant comedian.
Yes.
We were talking about this the other day, and she was saying that it's that thing of walking into a room, and even if it's just, it's a bit dark in here, can we sort the lights out? Or, has anyone got a pen? Like, make your voice. And
I just hit myself in the face with a hairdryer. That's going to work.
I think that encompasses everything.
Yeah.
No, I'm a lady, I have hair, and I'm here.
And I have a bruise on my face. So I'm just explaining it. So
I can't see anymore.
Right. I find it with panel shows, you know, that you do think you've got to try and get in early, because otherwise you do become the woman who's sitting there not saying anything. And the more that persists, then obviously the less inclined you are to join in and the less inclined anyone else is to give you space to do so.
Absolutely. And it's Gabby was saying it's a vocal thing as well. I'm obsessed with the voice. I love the voice. Ooh, understanding yes. it. Because we have a higher pitch. Mm. So if you're a room full of men, they're used to a certain sound and a certain pitch. You pipe in with a, hello, I want my this. Mm. And they've got to get used to it. You go, okay, this is in the room now. Listen to it. It is authoritative. It's just different to what you're tuned into. So that's really important as well, of sort of setting a level, really, the minute
I would
you
love
arrive.
To talk to you more about the voice issue.
I love the voice.
Alison, for those of you who don't know, does a character who is a...
Yeah.
Tell me about your voice character.
Well, when I first started in comedy... which was so many years ago. I did sketch comedy and I came up with a character who was Britain's number one vocal coach. And she called herself the human tuning fork. And I would do gigs where I would come on in this ridiculous wig and sort of floaty sort of bohemian chiffon kind of outfit. And but she'd be the most aggressive bitch. And because I think it's based on lots of my vocal coaches are wonderful, wonderful people, but they're always so aggressive and quite frightening, terrifying. And I always think with a voice, you're coaxing out of someone something quite vulnerable and intimate. Your singing voice is very exposing. Mm-hmm. Speaking alone is exposing to do. When we first open our mouths, we're judged instantly within the first 2 seconds of speaking. Mm-hmm. When you sing, it's even more. So I've always thought, surely it should be like walking into a womb, a safe place.
I know, a nice motherly, nurturing environment. Yeah. Yeah.
And it never was. I always had these wonderful women who would be aggressive, but they'd all be like, you've got to sing from your fanny, you've got to grab it, you've got to grab your sound and shit it out on the stage. And then
so shitting out of your fanny.
Shitting out of your fanny voice. So I kind of thought, oh, I'm going to take that then. And you, when you first start doing stuff, you always write what you know, what is kind of... And I don't do stand-up, I do character. So it's stand-up, but through the sort of filter of a personality. So I did her, and she was a human tuning fork, which meant that I stood on my head with my legs apart and got an audience member to play my legs as if I was a tuning fork, and that an Andrew Lloyd Webber number of their choice would come out of me as they moved my legs. And it was great, but it was exhausting, kind of 5-10 minute set. It was only that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would come off the stage and I'd have burst blood vessels all around my eyes because I'd been stood on my head for like 5 minutes singing Andrew Lloyd Webber. But that's where I started doing characters. And
I don't think I've ever committed that much to a performance of anything in my entire life. That's brilliant.
I avoided getting any kind of like burst blood vessel in my eye. So I mean, my mum coming to a gig and saying, stop doing this! Yeah. You're going to ruin your eyesight! I was like, asshole for the comedy!
I ended up right character, darling.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because I do, I mean, I am obsessed with vocal coaches as well. There was one when I did a play where I had to have an American accent for the two lines that I had in the play, and the vocal coach was hilarious because, again, very, yes, dismissive of my attempts at American. And it was terrible. I'm not in any way saying she was wrong. but yeah, and I've always been quite self-conscious about my voice being a little bit sort of girly and high-pitched. I was reading, again, a story that we'll come on to later, but the Women's Equality Party have announced their new leader. Oh. And I was reading a story about that, and in the comments at the bottom, which of course I shouldn't have read, but I did, someone had said, oh, well, yeah, this Women's Equality Party, oh, it all sounds a bit shrill to me. And I kind of thought, yeah, that shrillness being not only a kind of vocal characteristic, but also that kind of, like, the annoying, nagging whine. Mm-hmm. And like, because I know when I am emotional or when I'm particularly het up, I do go a bit higher. And I wish I could find a way not to do that. But then it would also, it does feel like the Margaret Thatcher syndrome, where you go, well, do you just try and talk like a man in order to be understood in a male world? Or do you just try and get men used to our shrill weenie? That's not even a word.
Weenie. But I think it's also a case of just sort of accepting those higher registers. because that's so pretentious, the higher register. Mm-hmm. But I do. I love the fact that when you use your voice properly and when it's engaging and interesting to listen to, it should be using all the different pitches and tones. And when I do a bit of vocal coaching myself. So when you're teaching mm-hmm. people about speech or using their voice when it's corporate or whatever it is, and you don't want to bore someone to tears, you don't want monotone the whole time, because mm-hmm. it will become really, really boring if you're listening to someone who's just talking on one tone. So you need a bit of kind of inflection, and you need to kind of flavour that sound and make it interesting. And if that means let's go shrill, let's go high, you're making a point with it. It's about when you use those tones and it being in control of that tone.
Yeah, that's my problem.
That's all it is. And that just takes... and you being a performer, you must have command of your breath and your...
Well, on a good day, on a good day, I do. And then there are times where I find myself. It's the tone of voice I used to tell off the children and to tell off hecklers is the same.
Yeah.
The same kind of. I'm better, actually. Having had to tell off children, I do find that I'm now better at dealing with hecklers in a sort of calm and measured.
What's your favourite put down?
Well, do you know, I mean, I haven't really got a standard put down. But it is often now a much more of a kind of a parental sort of tone, you know, that you're letting yourself down. Nobody's interested in what you've got to say. You know,
disappointed.
That's exactly. Patronising. Slightly superior. That's the kind of tone I like to adopt.
I like that. That's
days.
Very
Whereas
good.
I used to be a lot more shrill, a lot more kind of like, well, it's fine for you to say that. It's all right, very easy for you to sit down there, isn't it? Well, you come here, Timmy, try. Yeah, you try. Things have improved. That's all I can say. Things have improved. But I might try and do some live vocal coaching with you later on if that's all right.
Yeah.
Wow. I feel
what a good idea.
We owe it to the listener. We owe it to the listener, really, don't we? Well, and if you could also, Alison, just have a word with Ali, who does the stings, and talk to
him. Oh, my goodness.
You'll hear that one. Yeah, anyway, you'll hear more of Ali. Right. now, so let's choose your record. Now, I don't know what this is, and Amanda was very excited about this.
That's not the word I'd use.
That wasn't the word Amanda used. Don't misconstrue.
Exact words, I think, were, I never thought the day would come when I would play this person.
No. And I should warn you as well, this track is 7.5 minutes long.
Is it 7.5
minutes? So we're not going to be playing all of it, Alison. I mean, I don't even want to hear half a minute of it, but we know, you're our guest.
I did not realise how long it was. With this, and this is again, like...
Is this a genuine love? I'm going to try and guess what it is. Let me try and guess what it is.
Oh, really? Okay, so this is a love-hate.
Oh.
She's in my show. I play her. She's one of my characters in my show. So she's... And I set it in Las... So it's set in Las Vegas.
Oh, okay.
She's a singer.
Oh, I think I know who it is.
Okay. She splits people. She's absolutely crazy. Off her tits.
Yes, yes,
and
yes.
And beautifully yes. ripe. No, she's obviously been parodied and spoofed and impersonated for years. But what I do in my show is slightly different. And yeah, I don't want to ruin it, but she comes on with Michael Bolton's balls. And then just shit ensues. So I chose a song of hers, I think, so that some listeners would probably, I think we'll probably lose a lot of life.
But you know what? If we lose two of the three listeners that we have, then I don't think we need to worry too much. Well, I think I know who it is, and I may be off. If it's the Queen of Las Vegas. When I was in Las Vegas, she was in residency.
Oh.
Is it Dame Celine Dion?
It is indeed.
Oh, my goodness. Right. Let's not play that, Amanda.
This is happening.
No way.
Please
really.
Don't put your head in an oven.
As long as it's not
right
my
now.
Heart will go on, is it?
No. Thankfully, no.
No, all right no. then. Okay, I will let this pass. As long as, yeah, not we will all. Curtail it, right? Alison,
just go short.
And then
go
we're going to come back and make you think about what you've done.
Okay.
All right.
Gonna, so but you're going to secretly love it.
I don't know. I don't know that many Celine Dion songs.
No, thankfully, I don't.
But then maybe we've all been wrong all these years.
This one had a motorbike in the video, and she was running around an old house. I remember this when I was about 14. I remember it on MTV, and it did do a bit of, it did a bit of Sexual Awakening.
Ooh,
oh, did it? That was in the motorbike.
So right. Oh, okay.
The motorbike. No, well, it was the billowing curtains. It was everything. She's rolling around. She's rolling around with candles all around her, and I just couldn't help but think, Celine, you've got a lot of hairspray on.
Yeah. That's always going to be a fire risk, isn't it? My goodness.
It is.
Sexy Celine. Right, okay. Well, what is the song, please?
Well, Alison, would you like to introduce your track? Your track.
My track.
Yours and yours alone.
That will never be aired again. Is It's All Coming Back to Me Now.
Oh, yes, I Celine do know this one. Oh, lummy. Right.
Hey, it's happening.
Good luck, everyone. Strap in.
When the wind was so cold that my body froze in bed, if I just listened to it right outside the window. There were days when the sun was so cruel that all the tears turned to dust, and I just knew my eyes were drying up forever. Finished crying in the instant that you left, and I can't remember where or when or how, and I banished every memory you and I had ever made. But when you touch me like this and you hold me like that, I just have to admit it's all coming back to me. When I touch you like this and I hold you like that, it's so hard to believe, but it's all coming back to me. It's all coming back, it's all coming back to me now. There were moments of gold and there were flashes of light. There were things I'd never do again. It was so long ago, but it's all coming back to through me if you touch me like this, and if I kiss you like that. It was gone with the wind, but it's all coming back to me. It's all coming back. It's all
The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
More Celine Dion chat in a minute with Alison Thea Scott. But first, some exciting news. If you're heading to the Edinburgh Festival this year, the chances are you'll be booking your accommodation through Airbnb. Not only are they an official accommodation partner of The Fringe 2015, but Airbnb are also proud to host a secret variety show-style evening of performances open exclusively to its community of hosts and guests. The evening will take place on the 18th of August in a unique loft-style home listed on the platform in Leith. It's hosted by cabaret superstar Ali McGregor and features an exciting lineup of Fringe performers, including Lynn Ruth Miller of Britain's Got Talent fame and pop music comedy duo Die Roten Punkte. If you're planning a visit to Edinburgh for the Fringe over August 18th, book your accommodation with Airbnb and you might just get an invite to this secret event. Ooh, which is exciting. And we can now talk to one of the Airbnb hosts. It's James Lay. James, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi there. How are you
James?
Doing?
Oh, very well. Thank you so much for joining us all the way from Edinburgh. How is it in Edinburgh this evening?
It's okay. I've just cycled home from work and it is, yeah, it's kind of, it's not warm, but it's not really been warm this year. But
no,
yeah,
it never
it's
is,
nice.
Is it, James? It never is.
No.
I'm looking forward to coming up. And
excellent.
Tell me all about you and your Airbnb hosting. First of all, where is your place?
So yeah, I'm actually based in Leith as well, which I think is where the event is.
It absolutely is. Lovely, lovely Leith.
Yeah,
water.
So yeah, Leith's great. So yeah, I'm based in Leith, not too far from the shore, and I've been doing Airbnb since November. Mm-hmm. And it's been great. It's just I've been a host using just like a room in my flat. So, and I've had absolutely tons of guests from all over the world, so it's been really cool.
Amazing.
And I've got guests in August as well.
I bet you have. Oh my goodness, I bet they've bitten your hand off. When did you get booked up for the festival?
To be honest, it has been a bit slower, actually. I think a lot of people are looking for, like, entire places.
Ah.
And also the prices do go up in August. But, yeah, although I have had one booking since about February, so...
Yes,
yeah.
There's always some eager beavers who get in first thing. Well, and what do you think is the best thing about being an Airbnb host? Is it the meeting people, like you said?
Yeah, definitely. I think it is the variety of people you meet. And when you live in a city, you can often meet like none of the visitors and you don't really have any insight into where they've come from. But I've had literally people from all over the world staying for so many different reasons, like people staying on holiday, but also people doing really interesting kind of work. I had one guy recently who was doing a big golf tour of Scotland and stayed, and every day he would like drive off and play a different golf course. So
it's
been really interesting, and
well, it's nice
and it's fun.
From a performance point of view, you often feel a bit bad coming up to the festival, because I feel like, oh gosh, do all the local people kind of feel disconnected from the festival? Do they feel like it's not really kind of part of their scene? Whereas for you, I suppose, if you're hosting, presumably you might have performers, you might have festival goers.
Yeah, definitely. I have some theatre goers. I've got some people who program venues staying early in August. And yeah, I mean, I love it, because I also work in, part of the work that I do is in the theatre, producing for theatre. So yeah, it works really well for me. And yeah, I think it can be quite intense. Like, people are always saying, oh, like, you'll sleep in September, and just have the attitude that you're just going to have to go for it in August.
Yes.
Which can be fun, but you almost do 1 year when you totally go for it 100% and 1 year when you kind of take a back seat.
Yeah, 1999 was my going for it year, and I don't think I've ever recovered from it, frankly, James. It's still lingering on for me. But yeah, it's nice, isn't it, to be able to kind of dip in and out of it sometimes, just to have a dip your toe in. And what would be your top tips for anyone going to Edinburgh during the Fringe this year?
Well, I've seen some of the Traverse Theatre programme, and I do love the Traverse Theatre. Mm. There's a couple. Somebody I know has a play on there, Steph Smith, who's a really brilliant playwright, and her play Swallow looks really good. Mm. And also at the Traverse, the National of Theatre of Scotland are doing, they're doing a musical. It's got a really long title.
Oh, Sisters of Perpetual Succor, I believe, is the one that you are thinking of. Mate, yes, I've got tickets booked already reading, and I'm too excited.
Cool. I was reading about that today, and yeah, so it's the guy that wrote Billy Elliot who's working on it, and it just looks really exciting. So
I know, well, I've got, I should express a vested interest in this. I have a friend, Caroline Daga, who is in it, and Lee Clark, of whom you speak, who is an amazing writer, and it's based on a very successful book, and it's a sort of female coming of age story with lots of drinking and sex and, you know, all of that sort of shenanigans, and the music of ELO amongst others, I think. So it's kind of got, it's a little bit jukebox musical, but it's also an amazing kind of teenage girl coming of age story. So yeah, I'm massively looking forward to that. And as you say, the Travis is always a very safe bet, isn't it, really?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, there's loads of exciting stuff. And obviously, there's tons of stuff at Summer Hall as well. I really want to see a show that I've seen before, but they're revamping it for The Fringe, called The Voice Thief, which is a Catherine Wheel show, and that looks really good.
Yes, yes. Do you know what, James? I think you and I should meet up and be theatre-going buddies. We've got very similar tastes. This is marvellous.
Yeah.
In fact, I might.
And I also should plug my theatre, little theatre, which is the Village Pub Theatre, which is in Leith. Mm. And we are doing 12 different nights of shows from the 16th to the 29th of August, so for 2 weeks of The Fringe.
Fabulous.
So it's going to be a bit crazy, short plays.
Oh, good. Well, so you've got to kind of keep your powder dry for the first couple of weeks, and then
go
down for leather. So the Village Theatre, and also if people want to come down to Leith, because I think again a lot of people can get a bit trapped in the kind of the sort of central Fringe bubble and actually not realise what amazing things there are going on outside it. And if you come to Leith, you will eat the best food you've ever eaten in your life, meet amazing people, and go and see James's shows.
Yeah, and I think there are, like you say, there is more happening in Leith. Like, sometimes it can be really centralised, but I know, like, Hardeep Singh Kohli has a show on in Leith as well, and there's all sorts of stuff going on.
Yeah. So. Is that his restaurant? Cool. We could plug that. V-Deep. Let's just plug everything. Everyone
You've
we
got
know
all the information at your fingertips.
Do you know, well, I mean, I'm a font of knowledge, James. That's what I am. But anyway, you'll realise this when I come and stalk you in Edinburgh. So,
definitely.
I look forward to seeing you, and I hope you get wonderful people staying. I'm sure you will, thanks to Airbnb.
Thank you.
Cheers, James.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye. Wasn't he lovely? Oh, do you know, this is the thing, this is why I love doing the Edinburgh Festival so much, is that every year, every single year I've ever done it, I have always met a new amazing, at least one, I mean, often many, amazing people. It's so, do you know where you're staying at, Alison?
I do, and I have exactly this. I found a lady on the digs list for, I think it was the Traverse Theatre, possibly. I've not played those theatres, but I have lots of actors who have, so I took that digs list and I called everyone and I found this lovely woman who has a huge house just off the meadows. She said, yeah, come and stay with me for 10 days. I was only up last year for 10 days. And then this year I'm going back for the whole month. And she's wonderful. She makes me breakfast.
This is the lovely thing,
every
you see.
Day.
This is, again, through Airbnb. You can find these amazing people. Mm-hmm. They're so good. Now, I'm delighted that we will now be joined with the lovely Ali McGregor. Ali!
Hello, Lucy.
Hey, it's lovely to speak to you. How are you? And where in the world are you? It's so hard to keep tabs on you. You're always somewhere.
It is a little, but I'm in London. I'm not very far away from where I believe you are right this very second.
Ooh, well, you should pop in. We've got Pims. We haven't even cracked it open yet.
Oh, really? I've got a gin and tonic, so, you know, beat you to it. It's all good.
Fine, good. Well, I'm glad to see you starting early, Ali. That's good to know. So now I want to talk to you about this Airbnb showcase that you're doing, but I suppose we should set up for people, first of all, that you are a chanteuse, cabaret artiste extraordinaire. And how long have you been performing at Edinburgh for now, Ali?
Well, actually, funny you should ask, because it is my 10th year this year of performing there. Thank you. Yeah, that's somewhat of a feat, isn't it? So 10 years. I mean, I came there, first of all, with Le Clique, which has now become La Soiree. Mm-hmm. And so I got brought over, and I had no idea what to expect when I first got there. And and as you know, it is an addiction.
Oh, gosh,
and once you get there, and halfway through, you generally are, I'm never coming back to this. This is awful. It's the worst thing in the world. And about 2 days later, you're planning your next year's show. So,
yes, from tears to elation in about the space. It's like the Edinburgh weather. You go through everything
exactly.
in the space of one day, don't you?
It is.
So 10 years. So this year, your 10th show. Have you planned something special for the people of Edinburgh?
Yeah. Well, I'm mainly going up there to do my kids' show, Jazz and the Taz, which I've done a couple of times before. We're doing the full season this year. But I'm doing a one-off show called Decadence, which the savvy amongst your listeners will know that, of course, the word decade is in that. I thought long and hard about that that
you
title. But
yes, so
I'm doing just a one-off show of that in the middle on that sort of lovely dark day when most performers have the day off, because I thought that'd be good fun and just sing, you know, a few greatest hits.
Well, that's nice because it means everyone can come and see your show.
That was kind of the plan. I wanted it to be a bit of a love-in, you know.
Yeah,
so,
exactly. You've got to celebrate these things, haven't you?
Well, that's it. And you don't do Edinburgh to make money. You do it to have fun, and that's what I'm doing.
Good God, no. Exactly. Yes, it's all about the fun. And will you tell us about the exclusive Airbnb event that you are hosting on the 18th of August?
I am. Look, I'm very excited about doing this, mainly because Airbnb has become quite a thing in my life, you know, as you know, as a touring performer, and as a touring performer with children, with a family, Airbnb has become a lifesaver because you want to try and create some sort of feeling of home when you are not at home, which is sort of most of the time. And in fact, quite coincidentally, I've found my accommodation through Airbnb this year in Edinburgh, and, you know, I really do use it a lot. So when I was asked to host this little event, I was more than happy to be involved, you know, because it is such a great thing, and I think it's such a great thing for performers and, you know, people who do travel a lot.
Yeah, well, actually, because that child friendliness thing is so important. There is nothing worse, is there, than when you turn up in a flat and, you know, everything is kind of, oh, it's all hard glass surfaces and...
Exactly, but also just that feeling of home, I think I really miss. Like, staying in a hotel can have all the mod cons, but it just feels always like a hotel. Whereas you stay in, you know, and I've you get an experience of the place you're staying in. We went to Copenhagen just for a little break last year. I remember I took the kids, and we stayed in this lovely apartment in the middle of the city, and they had kids, and I felt like I was a real local. You know, you're in this little flat, and you sort of get to know your neighbours, and even though it's a few days, you get a real experience for it. So I think that's so much more fun than staying in a sort of hotel, which is always a little bit kind of cold and lonely.
I know exactly where you're coming from. In fact, just before we were talking to you, we were talking to a man called James, who is an Airbnb host in Edinburgh, who was delightful and did make me think, actually, if, you know, anyone should go and stay with someone as lovely as James. And because you do, then you get a bit of local insight as well, don't you?
You do. And I've actually had nothing but good experiences in that I've always sort of got along quite well with the host, and they're good because I don't tend to really sort of get their nose into your business too much, but they're sort of there enough for you to kind of get a few tips on the city you're in and do all that sort of stuff, but then they stay away and leave you to it, which is nice. But generally, as I said, I've had really good experiences, and in fact my mother and brother now run a couple of little properties in Melbourne, Australia, through Airbnb at my encouragement. And they also have really, my brother especially, he's in his late 20s, and he just has met some really interesting people travelling around. And he's actually gone and stayed in Spain. He's in Spain at the moment staying with someone he met through his Airbnb in Melbourne. They came and stayed with him, and they said, come over to Spain, and he was.
It's a lovely community. Well, I think that's what's nice about this event as well, is it's obviously going to encourage that sense of community where the hosts and guests from Airbnb are going to be able to come along. So
I think it's lovely, yeah. Because there's going to be a lot of like-minded people, I think, all sort of joined together, and that's what Edinburgh's all about anyway, sort of finding your tribe.
And excellent talent as well. You, Lynn Ruth Miller, Die Roten Punkte, and who else? I think I'm up there, so I might... I'll see you at your show. I'll see you...
You will, hopefully.
But I'll see you there, and I'll see you at the Airbnb show.
It's a pretty awesome lineup. I'm pretty happy. I'm a cabaret junkie, so to see that lineup. I'm very happy,
Cool. All right, my love. Well, enjoy your gin and tonic, and we'll see you up in Edinburgh.
See you there. Thanks, Lucy. Bye.
The Lucy Porter Show on FUBAR Radio.
There There's BMF by Sierra from our album of the week. And yeah, just saying I was right about the pronunciation of her name, by the way, Amanda. Nothing, not going to make a big thing of it, but just so you know, I was right.
Noted.
And before that, we were talking to the brilliant Ali McGregor, whose shows you must go and see in Edinburgh. And talking of brilliant musicians, we're joined by one in the studio. It's Shayla Rose. Hello, Shayla.
Hello, Lucy. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to have you. It's because we are doing, our show is a celebration of women, and we always have female comedians on chatting and female novelists, and we play female music, and to have a female musician in the studio is something of an honour and a treat. So tell us about yourself. How long have you been making music for?
I mean, I've been doing it since I was like 2 years old. I've been doing it for a while now, but I officially released my original music this year. Uh-huh. So I've always done singing, performing arts in school. I was Juliet
once,
like loads of community events and like gigs and uni throughout to uni.
Where do you live, by the way?
I'm from Blackheath in South London.
A lovely spot.
Yeah, nice little quiet spot there.
Very nice.
Yeah, so I've just been literally doing it all my life, singing, dancing, acting, presenting, modelling, anything.
Blue modelling.
Yeah.
And is it is London a good place to be doing new music at the moment?
London is the place to be. It's very hard, but it's the place to be. There's so much going on. There's live music everywhere. People are literally playing instruments on the train. It's just, it's a lovely place to be. Or you hear people talking about shows and gigs. So London's hot right now. Yeah.
Do you think it's a, I mean, like you've done, I saw on your website, which Shayla Rose Music?
Yeah.
There's some footage of you doing a show in Hoxton recently. Yeah. Where do you think are the hot spots right now in London to go and play?
Oh, it depends, really. It depends where people put on events as well, because people tend to use different spaces to do events. But Box Park in Shoreditch is really hot right now.
Yes.
That's a nice place. Indigo, O2, O2 Arena, obviously places that people can sell out. But just whatever.
I mean, for the listeners outside of London, the Box Park in Shoreditch is amazing because it's basically a load of shipping containers which they have fashioned into this. It's incredible. And it is, on the one hand, you go, oh, it is a bit wanky London. That it's just all these shipping containers and we just put this amazing. But actually, it is phenomenal when you go there.
They're
there
done
is
really
so
well.
Much amazing.
Is it
stuff
by Shoreditch
going
High
there?
Street train station?
Yes.
I've walked past it and thought, I wonder what's inside
I wonder
that.
All those shipping containers.
Oh, you can see music there. Oh, gosh.
Yeah,
it's the way of the future. I was looking at it going, I want to build a house. This is a really good way to just create a space. It's incredible.
Nice
and cheap. And given that I, Shayla, I'm rubbish at contemporary music, we were saying that Sierra, I mean, I think that album is from like last year or the year before, and that is the most modern music I've had on this show. Generally, it's sounds of the 70s with Lucy. So will you enlighten me? And I'm sure some of our older and more confused listeners about who we should be listening to right now, who's inspiring you, who are amazing female artists particularly to be aware of.
Definitely. You know, you have the usual Beyonce. She's always in the charts.
She's all right, yeah. She's pretty good. I've heard of her.
Yeah. I do like Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift's got some good music. She's really young, pop and fun, but she's got some good music. I like underground people as well. Mm. So, like, there's a lady called Janae Aiko that I love. I love Brandy.
I know Brandy.
From, yeah. She's not underground, but I love Brandy.
So
she's still going. Because what was that song she did that was kind of her big thing?
Are you talking about Aphrodisiac? I don't know.
She's had
a few hits.
She had a big one, didn't she? And I remember she was wearing a lovely glittery dress.
Oh, I'll look it up. You see, look at you. Alison's just going, I remember
the
fashion.
I remember the dress. She hasn't been doing music recently because she's been doing Broadway. She's on the horizon. There's some other singers. There's a lady called Tink. Like, I love a lot of American underground as well music. So, obviously you've got your Adele's. In the charts now, there's a lot of dance music. So a lot of people are doing collaborations. So you get like Ella Eyre, but she does like collaborations with like Rudimental. Uh-huh. And then you get like Sam Smith. Obviously, he's a guy. Yeah. But people like that are in the charts now.
Yeah. Oh, I've heard of some of them. I feel much better now. I feel like I'm not so out of the loop. In fact, we were just preliminary chatting there before while we were playing that record about the Nicki Minaj and Taylor Swift debacle, which I know you were saying you haven't really had time to catch up.
Yeah, I didn't hear, but I saw on Twitter.
But you know, it's been a tweeting frenzy. It's so interesting. What I love about Twitter is that it is like the playground fights that you had when you were young.
Literally.
Just like, you know, and it's so like one night, Nicki Minaj is there and she hasn't been nominated for it's the VMA Awards.
Right.
And, you know, which it was at the VMAs, wasn't it, that Taylor Swift was interrupted during her acceptance speech by Kanye when he said, I'm going to let you finish, but Taylor, but when he thought Beyonce should have won. And so Nicki Minaj was upset that she hadn't been nominated. In fact, the video for Anaconda, which I've seen, and it is a phenomenal piece of work. Have you seen it?
Yes, I
pretty amazing.
Good Lord. Now, really, I mean, that is quite extraordinary.
That brings out the prude in me. I turn into my mother and I see my future when I'm 40, 50 going, that's not acceptable. That's too much skin.
It is really outrageous.
And they're a little girl. Watching this.
I know.
What are they going to do? Start shaking their bottom like a snake?
I know. I mean, I love shaking my bottom like
pretty,
a snake.
It is pretty good, I know.
It is. I mean, but in the way that just that is the way that music videos are going. And actually, speaking as a parent, all you do is you just go, well, I'm just not going to let my kids watch it until they're of an age to understand what it's all about.
And can you control it? Like,
you can.
Are you
able to? I mean, I think you just have to let them know what it's all about early and go, that's not what you need to do. Exactly. That's a music video. That's not real life.
It's not exactly. It's all for the TV. Yeah. It's
not. But I mean, it is phenomenal though. However you slice it, that is an amazing video. And so Nicki felt that. So her initial tweet was, "If I was a different kind of artist, kind in inverted commas, Anaconda would be nominated for Best Choreo and Vid of the Year as well." When the other girls drop a video that breaks records and impacts culture, they get that nomination. And obviously that everyone took that as a kind of a subtweet about Taylor Swift, about the fact that the Bad Blood video, which again is, see, Bad Blood is it's a good video. It's a kind of good kick-ass.
It's a good video, but it's so awkward.
It's really weird, but I loved it because I was like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next? Who's going to come out now? Oh my God, Ellie Goulding.
It was Cariad Lloyd. Cariad Lloyd brought it to my attention. She put it on Facebook and said, this is the most awkward, uncomfortable video I've watched. It's a cracking tune, but look at the awkwardness and the way that, is it Ellie Goulding fires a bazooka?
It
was really random.
I mean, come on, at least pretend you're firing some kind of war.
Yeah.
Because that's just...
You do get to see who's an actor and who's not. Like, actually, Cara Delevingne, you go, yeah, fair play to you. You look like you know, you can act. Yeah. Whereas, yeah, poor Ellie.
Poor Ellie.
Don't give up the day job. I mean, you're very good at your day job, Ellie, so let's stick with that. But it is... But that has been nominated. And, you know, and I sort of can see... And then, anyway, so this sort of went on as a bit of a back and forth. And Taylor said, look, you know, let's not make this about women. Let's, you know, maybe one of the guys took your nomination and said, you can come up on stage with me. You know, and it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because she said, oh, yeah, if I win, please come up with me. You're invited to any stage I'm ever on. So she's obviously trying to be conciliatory. Mm. But then people are saying, well, kind of it's, and then, of course, Kim Kardashian weighed in. I love the fact, anything you go, did Kim Kardashian have an opinion? Could Kim possibly have got involved? Oh, she did. Oh, yeah. good. That's fine. It's an interesting one because you go, well, like racism in the music industry obviously is still in the same way that, you know, we were talking earlier on before you were here, Shayla, about the fact that in the entertainment industry we're naming sexism, we're calling it out, but does that mean it's really changing?
Mm.
And the same in the music industry with racism. You go, well, just, you know, I think Nicki Minaj has got a point. I think, actually... You know,
if you think about it, it's like when you look at the top of who's actually winning, it's just, you kind of see a common kind of look kind of thing, and it's, you can't deny it, but it kind of is what it is. You just got to keep, these artists love what they do, like I love what I do, so you've just got to crack it, really.
Yeah, well, like we were saying about women, you know, you've just got to wait till you're in that position of power where you can say, actually, you know, because I mean, you think, well, Beyonce has done an amazing thing for everyone
in
the entertainment industry, really. Yeah. I mean, you know,
in
she's
the world,
just basically,
in the world, yeah.
I'm just saying, I love her. Just
in the world, yeah. But no, also for black women as well. She's the most famous, almost famous black singers in the world, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she's black, but she works hard, like she's crazy. Like she was off, but she was literally on tour making an album like no one knew about, but she was on a worldwide tour, like she, and then she had a baby and she didn't do you know what I mean?
Oh, her maternity leave was about like 2 minutes,
literally.
It
really?
Oh. Incredible.
When she was like having a baby, she was still on the stage, so it just shows like you just got to keep working hard, you just got to go before like all the statistics, and you just got to do what you've got to do, really.
I know, and it's hard, you sort of think, well, actually, maybe Taylor Swift could have made a stronger stand in support, or, you know, is it kind of up to her to do it? It's a very difficult one, and I think she was quite gracious, but... Yeah, maybe. Anyway, do you know what? The nice thing about this is I'm sure we haven't heard the end of this story.
Yeah, it's going to keep going.
Due to the beauty of Twitter, this will be going. In fact, by the time anyone listens to this show on the podcast, they'll be like, yeah, that old story, that's so old. But anyway, it's lovely to talk to you, Shayla, but really what I think we need to do is hear your music.
Yay.
Because, now, and what I love about this song as well is it's got a brilliant, slightly... sour, cynical message to it, which I'm very much on board. Tell me about the reason you came to write this song and the sentiments behind it.
Well, it was, you know, based on the past experience, I have to say. And
did somebody let you down?
Yeah, he was a bit crazy. So I was just like, wow, like this is, I'm getting to a stage, an age, actually, should I say, where I just don't need to deal with crazy, really.
So
I just had to kind of let it go. And I was in the studio that day, and my what my producer does, Mr. Dimension, bless him, he just wants to, you know, open up and see what's going on with me, because I'm quite a close person. Mm-hmm. But with music, your best songs come from your experiences, right?
Hell yeah.
So he's like, what's going on with you? I was like, this guy. What about this guy? So he kind of got it out of me. And I was just like, yeah, bye, Felicia. Little saying. And he was like, bye. That's it, bye. So then that's how it came around. So I just thought, instead of trying to, you know, jump on guys and, you know, say they're this, they're that, why not just make it a universal sound and just say you don't have to put up with anything, really. Just make it fun and just keep it going. Yeah, you don't have to be in a situation you don't really want to be just because you want to have a boyfriend.
I love a good breakup song.
Exactly. So had to make it fun. The video is even funner, but
And so we're going to play it now, and it's available now. It's available soon.
It's on YouTube right now. If you go on Shayla Rose, youtube.com/Shayla Rose.
And Shayla Rose is ShaylaRose.
That's right. And then just add an X on the end for the YouTube channel. And the audio's up. So.
Excellent. And it's called?
#by.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Cheers. Well, it's been absolutely lovely to talk to you. And let's hear from Shayla Rose.
Lucy Porter on FUBAR Radio.
How wonderful. That was Bye by Shayla Rose. Do check that out on YouTube. And wasn't she marvellous? And Alison, Thea Scott. Now, what happened there was we were talking some time ago about Celine Dion.
Oh.
And it was like you dodged the bullet, because then we got caught up with other things.
Oh, yes. We need to talk about this.
We haven't let you off that.
I'm not surprised, because I mean, I'm sure that half the listeners are only just recovering.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping people would have come back for Shayla after having left after Celine.
I think Shayla brought the quality back.
yes.
The lever's gone up.
Do you know, it was. It is interesting, though, because I think Celine Dion is a very good character to do, because everybody does know her and everybody does have a kind of opinion.
Exactly.
One way or the other.
Indeed. I think, because I'm not doing impressions, so I don't start with her. So you're not going, oh, OK, it's a whole show of just doing female singers or impressions, because I know certain female comedians who do that brilliantly on the circuit. So what this is more of a parody, and it's more of a kind of, let's take a context everyone knows. So you're immediately on board with an idea. You all have an idea of what you think she's possibly like, and then let's flip it and let's have some really kind of mad fun with it. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time I've done that. All my characters and the rest of them in my show are very fictional and are maybe a sort of a sense you might recognise. I don't tend to do, oh, I know that character. That's... you know, I'm going to do someone from a certain walk of life that you know you've met. I don't do that. I take sort of, I like to kind of do something a bit more interesting, maybe.
But you know, kind of having read your reviews, and they are amazing, brilliant reviews. So because Edinburgh, how many Edinburgh shows have you done now?
So I've done two solo Edinburgh shows. So this is my third solo character show. So it's And I genuinely feel like it's... I mean, everyone always says the current show is the best show they've done, but it really is. I'm so proud of it. And what I wanted to do this time is have fun characters, but make the room kind of one. And I know you always want that. You want your room to feel comfortable and everyone's having a laugh, but I wanted every show to be a bit different. So there's a little bit of improv in there. There are certain characters that create something with the audience involved, and then it gets referenced for the rest of the show. No. People get used in a very kind, loving...
people get used.
They get used and
chewed
abused.
Chewed up and spat out.
and I wanted it to almost feel like... And it did. I did a preview last night and it got there. At the end, audience members who I didn't know were coming up to me and hugging me. And this woman said, "Can I get a hug, please?" And I was like, "Yes, of course you can." And I wanted... That sounds so pretentious.
God, who wants to hug a performer after an hour on stage?
I mean,
she
disgusting.
Must have liked you a lot. That's all I can say.
And I kind of... I think it's from watching people like Adam Riches, and I think he turns his room into one hive mind, and everyone's up on stage, and they know that when they get up there, it's going to be fun. And when you're watching it, you're like, I want to get up there, and it's not scary. You're not ever being made a fool of. Mm-hmm. You become a hero, and in my show, the audience becomes heroes. And everyone, hopefully, by the end, has gone through this one crazy mad experience. And it's almost like they've helped me and I've helped them. And it's not changing. It's not changing the world. But by the end, you've met these mad characters and you've all created something together.
Nice.
And that's what I wanted this show to be.
Oh, it's a lofty ambition.
It sounds like
you're getting there, so I'm not going
to...
Can I just read you some of your reviews? Oh. I know this is always an awful thing for
I don't know whether to cringe or to give it to
me. This is a lovely one. This wonderful up-and-comer on the comedy scene is a force to be reckoned with and has produced an hour of sheer madness that will send any aisle rocking. Her creations are sparkling with comic glitter, poetry to watch. Isn't that lovely?
That was delightful.
Fun, truly demented character comedy, a satisfyingly dark writer and wildly versatile performer, a terrific new comic creation. Thea Scott is very talented. She's clearly a funny woman. an absolute tour de force. I mean, you know, it's amazing. And then my favourite was Chortle, who simply described it as batshit mental. that's an achievement, isn't it? Batshit mental.
I've had that a lot. I'm preparing myself this year because I've had this before where the reviewer will comment on you as a person, obviously, but they'll say that you are batshit crazy and that your material is batshit crazy and that you're on the brink of a breakdown. It's like, that's not. To be able to produce an hour of chaos and madness, you really have to be quite stable so that you can then create that and be in control of it as well. So
because we've all seen genuinely mad performances, and that is not a
and
restful
that's not
experience.
Comfortable,
is it?
Exactly.
No, that's
not the kind of chaos you want to be in the middle of. That's a real kind of shitstorm, to use that word again. So I'm prepared for, you know, maybe receiving reviews like that again, which I can only take as a compliment, hopefully, rather than...
They've fallen for what you were trying to convey, and they're
indeed
not quite bright enough to work out how you did it.
Yeah.
Which is good, more for them rather than... it was... there was Steam Riscopolis. Was that last year or the year before?
He was nominated last year, and he did his second show just recently. He's Barry nominated for that in Melbourne, I think. And then he just did it at Soho Theatre, and I saw it a week or so ago.
Because he creates, like Adam Riches, as you were saying, and your good self, you know, it is that sort of... Because a lot of people will say, I hate audience participation. Ugh, nothing I can think of that's worse than being involved in a show.
Yeah.
My husband, being one of those people, even though he's a performer himself, he is, you know, butt-clenchingly embarrassed by being called up on stage. Mm-hmm. But with Steam Riscopolis, again, it's that... Because, you know, everyone's doing it. We're all sort of doing silly, fun things, and there is no sense that anyone's being made a fool of or being made to look foolish.
No.
And it is... Yeah, I mean, the first time I saw Adam Riches, I did feel quite scared because he was spraying Yakult quite liberally over the
That's
audience.
That's Victor. Victor Legit, his character. I think Adam is kind of like a master of audience interaction and getting any audience member to do what he wants. Mm-hmm. And that takes trust and skill and likability, charm, and all of those things take years to hone. And so watching him, you like a magpie, you kind of pilfer little bits. So like, I like what you did there and how you did that. And then Steen, again, is someone else I watched and was kind of quite blown away with how he does that in a very different way. And he came to see a preview of mine, actually, a few weeks back. And we sat, he was so lovely, we sat for like an hour talking about what I was trying to do, how I was trying to achieve it, and his little thoughts. And he just got off the plane as well. So he was eight, he was like jet lagged.
All his thoughts were completely insane.
He was, sat there half asleep, but writing down all his genius. And he was saying exactly that, that I know exactly what you're trying to do. It's turning your audience into a hero. It's never anything more complicated than that. Mm-hmm. And so I can understand it, because actually, even though that's what I do, if I go and watch a show, I'll sit quite far back, mm-hmm. because I don't mind being picked on. But because I'm a performer as well, you sometimes might maybe not give that performer what they want.
Yes.
And that's risky as well, because I love it when it's truly someone who isn't trying to be funny,
yeah.
isn't trying to take the limelight, is just going to see what happens, and then I get to coax that out of them and play with them, and I'll go with whatever's given to me. Mm-hmm. But that's why sometimes I don't mind it, but I think, well, I'll just sit back, because yeah. I don't...
Oh, God, because yeah. in Edinburgh particularly, because I, you know, I go and see hundreds of things if I can, mm. and often things can be, you know, if you're in some of the venues that are further out or whatever, you can be in a very small audience. I mean, everyone gets... We've all had small audiences in Edinburgh. Yeah. And it is really... I find it really difficult when people say, oh, so what do you do? And then you kind of go, if I say I'm a comedian, mm. then we're into a whole world of pain yeah. here, aren't we? Because it's not... No one... You know, anyway... and it is, and I've done it myself where I've been talking to members of the audience in Edinburgh, and the worst thing is when it's a student drama company and you say, and you know, now I think the beauty, the benefit of experience is you can sniff them out a mile away. Yeah. So when there are mm-hmm. enthusiastic looking young people yeah, sitting in the front of my show, obviously looking like they want to be picked on, I kind of get it out of the way and yep. go, yes, now which student drama company are you? Where can we see? And then they always stand up and they've all got the t-shirts on with advertising their show.
Wow.
You know, so you sort of, you go, yeah, we'll get that done, because otherwise if I try and genuinely interact with you in a normal mm-hmm. way, it's not going to work at all. So, yeah. you know, let's find yeah. someone who is, you know, a taxi driver or a vet, you know, someone yeah. that, who's got a proper job.
And someone who and maybe you'll change their mind about audience participation. Yeah. But if you give them a good experience, then maybe they'll leave that and go, actually, okay, if I get picked on again, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
That's the goal. God, the last thing you want to do is pick on them and then they have a shit time. Yeah. And they feel like they've been ridiculed and you're like, can you put £5 in the bucket, please, for that experience you've had? So, yeah, you try your hardest.
God, I suppose that, because yeah. the thing with the Free Fringe as well, that is I find it quite brutal that you feel, you look at the bucket and you feel like, oh, okay, so they liked me more than last night or less than last night.
It's immediate. Or... Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I did 10 days on the Free Fringe last year, and it was a very late night work in progress show, so it wasn't a true test of perhaps what it would be like with a full blown, this is my new hour, I've put all my heart and soul into it, let's see what the bucket comes up with. And but I'm trying not to judge that too much. It's more about I suppose,
well, the hugs are pretty good. I mean, someone wanting to go up and hug you, I love that. And it is something that because in Edinburgh I think you are a bit more accessible,
yeah,
because you know you have to get in and out of your venue and there's always, you know, someone mm-hmm. on after you. And I interact way more in Edinburgh with audience members yeah. than the rest of the time. I mean, it's just like tenfold the amount of. And it's really interesting when you get people coming up to you and telling you what they thought about bits of your show
yeah.
that completely contradict what you had in mind when you were writing and performing
it. How you thought it was going to come across.
Maybe in a good way, maybe in a bad way, whatever. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, how people interpret.
How many characters are you doing in this show then?
This year I have it's like eight. There are eight sections in the show, and I think five characters. I think five or six characters. I can't remember. Crikey, there's so many.
You just work through you. You don't just, even. They're not even aware of them.
They just appear, and I channel them. And I do a couple of sections as me. I go on a date in my show.
Oh, yeah.
As well. I'm a single lady. I'm going to use the whole month in Edinburgh to find myself a man.
Yeah.
So I use one section. Yes, I genuinely have a date and we have a meal. And and then I find out a little bit of something about them. And then I also have kind of like a kind of bizarre characters, a couple of singing characters. And I can't think. I want a superhero who's heavily pregnant.
Oh,
that's really
good
fun.
You've got me now. Yay! I mean, you had me, but you've got me
You had me at superhero.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Pregnant superhero, because that's pregnant how superhero. All pregnant women feel, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Indeed. Come on.
So, how exciting.
How do you deal with being heavily pregnant and about to go on maternity leave when you've got a meteor about to hit Earth? So yes. What does that mean for her?
My goodness. I mean, it's a pertinent and burning question for those of
and
us who are
and it's topical
superheroes.
As well. Supergirl's coming out next year. So,
oh, well,
I'm just
you're
getting
ahead
in
of
there.
The curve.
I'm ahead of the curve, guys.
That's what we call it. listen, a terrible, terrible thing has happened, Elton, which is...
I didn't want to say,
Pim's
but...
Hour has been going for ages. We got so distracted by fun
oh my
that
goodness.
The serious business of boozing has been neglected, Amanda.
Thank you.
Now, to raise our glasses, we always need to find someone to raise our glasses to. Normally it's someone who is dearly departed and we're remembering, often Kirsty MacColl.
Oh, it is. It's been her a couple of times, yeah.
But let's raise our tins to Celine Dion.
Oh.
Let's raise our tins to Celine.
She's not
Amanda's
dead.
Not going to do it. She's very much not.
She's not dead. But I mean, it sounds like in your
for
heart,
you, Alison. For you. I will raise my pims to Celine.
Cheers.
Cheers. Celine Dion.
Celine.
Yes.
She's probably in Vegas still.
Oh, yeah, she's about to go back to Vegas.
Is she good?
She had a little break. Rene, her husband, a little ill.
Oh,
a little bit ill. But now back on his feet. And
he's
and
quite a lot older than her, isn't he?
Yeah. It's odd. He managed her, I think, from very, very young age. And then it became love.
Oh, it blossomed. Well, that's lovely. There's nothing creepy
about
that. So that's
happy
good.
Ending there.
lovely. Right, shall we have a little record to mark the Celine Dion Pims moment? What are you going for, Amanda?
Well, I went for a Celine Dion antidote. I thought I'd have Brass in Pocket by The Pretenders.
Oh, no, that is better. That is better.
Thank
I'm going to give you that.
Lovely.
Got this. She is a very funny writer who, I mean, British originally. She lived all over the world. Died in Mexico in 2011, aged 94. It's Leonora Carrington. Leonora Carrington, she was born in 1917 in Chorley in Lancashire and had an incredible life. She was born to a wealthy textile manufacturer and she was sort of a society girl. So she was about to be presented as a deb at court. And she chose a very different life. So she was educated by governesses, tutors and nuns. She was expelled from two schools, including the Newhall School, Chelmsford, for her rebellious behaviour. So she got sent to Florence to try and calm her down. They sent her to Florence to attend a kind of finishing school, Mrs. Penrose's Academy of Art. And in 1927, at the age of 10, she saw her first surrealist painting in the Left Bank Gallery. And this changed her life. So she wanted to become an artist. She was incredibly affected by surrealism. And so she was presented at court as a deb, but then she said, no, I'm not going to marry. I'm not going to become an aristo wife. I'm going to go to the Chelsea School of Art, which she did. And then it developed her love of surrealism. And then she saw the work of Max Ernst, the famous German surrealist, at the International Surrealist Exhibition in London. And fell in love with him through his work, contrived to meet him in London, and then he left his wife for her. So she basically decided, that's my fella, and he obviously reciprocated her affections. And they lived together in France, and Ernst was arrested, and he managed to escape to America. But she fled to Spain. They were estranged, her and Max Ernst, and then she had quite a powerful nervous breakdown and was hospitalised in Madrid, dosed up on drugs, and then she was released into the care of a nurse who took her to Lisbon, where she ran away and sought refuge in the Mexican embassy. And then she got back together with Max Ernst, they got married, got divorced again. And then she went back. So then she wrote a novel about her psychotic experience called Down Below. Then she moved to Mexico. Basically, her whole life is a story of great periods of artistic clarity and expression and then terrible periods of mental illness. She said, I didn't have time to be anyone's muse. I was too busy rebelling against my family and learning to be an artist. So the traditional role of muse for women in the art world, she rejected that. She married again, moved to Mexico and died at the age of 94. But her paintings are incredible, and her novel, The Hearing Trumpet, is one that I would heartily recommend that anyone seeks out, because it's an incredibly, like, bonkers, talking about batshit mental.
She sounds like my kind of lady.
It's a wonderful, it's a story about an old woman she gets wind of the fact that her family are trying to put her in a home. And so she's got all these sort of weird friends, and so they kind of, she gets into this like incredibly odd old people's home where there are loads of different buildings designed in really crazy ways, and she sort of meets all these weird crazy characters in the old people's home, and then they effectively stage a coup. And it's a really lovely, really funny, really, and it's about kind of aging and death, and but it's just incredibly surreal, incredibly funny in a sort of really weird way. And I think you, Alison Thea Scott, would enjoy it.
How old was she when she wrote that novel then? Was she herself a little older?
Well, I think it was after her brushes with institutionalisation. Let's have a look.
I love the fact that she was sent to Florence for bad behaviour.
Yes, what a kind of...
I'd give anything.
I'm just going to be a very bad girl now.
I'm just going to act up.
A lovely holiday to Italy.
You're not really likely to get sent to Florence by me. 1976. So fairly late on. So she would have been in her... She says doing the maths. 76. She says she was in her 60s.
Okay.
Oh, well, I can't. Late 50s.
I must be. I can't say that's old. My mum's in her mid 60s, and she would absolutely kill me.
I imagine that.
Young and sprightly. Come on.
I know.
She does. She sounds fascinating.
It's a really good. And I mean, yeah, because you know, there's. I'm trying to see where any of her artworks exist. I shall find out, and I shall put it on the website at some point.
And I find that the idea of when you separate from someone, if they obviously had a passionate, loving relationship, her and Max Ernst, you kind of think, and then to be separated, and then for that to rekindle and start again. Mm. I always find that's just the makings of a great romantic novel, isn't
it? Yeah. Well, there's definitely a film in Leonora Carrington, I think.
Yeah.
I should write that. I'll do that. I'll write that. I have that on your desk by Monday. That's fine. I've got a book to write for Helen Lederer last week, but it's fine. I'll find time in my busy schedule.
Cast yourself as a title role there.
But she was suggested by one of our eager listeners as a great comedy novelist. Mm. And someone else also suggested Jane Austen, which I thought was quite interesting. And you are affiliated to the Ostentatious Improv Troupe, aren't you? Tell us about, for those listeners who don't know about Ostentatious, tell us a bit about that.
So Ostentatious, the improvised Jane Austen novel, is exactly as it sounds. It's a troupe of, there's seven of them, fantastic British improvisers on the comedy circuit. And they improvise an entirely made-up Jane Austen novel in an hour. They've been going for 4 or 5 years now. Great success at Edinburgh. They had a national tour this year as well. I do improv, and because of their tour this year and each of them being very successful in their own right, individually with their sort of solo comedy and producing and podcasts and writing for QI and all sorts of wonderful things they do between them, they get a little busy. So I'm their female dep. So when they are down a player, I will step up and join them. So I've had some...
Step up and bodice up.
Step up, bonnet up. Mm-hmm. That's my favourite thing. I don't know if they'll mind me saying this, that before every show, I didn't know that they had this ritual. Before every show, they put their hands in the centre and everyone goes, bonnets! And I didn't know what they were saying at first. So I just went... Hornets! I wasn't sure what they were saying. Then I got it. Oh, yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Bonnets,
Regency. Got it, guys. Yeah, not a nasty wasp. And I've had some of the best improvised gigs of my life working with those guys. Mm. I did one gig at the Udderbelly on the South Bank because they did about 3-4 shows on the South Bank just gone in preparation for doing the Udderbelly Cow in Edinburgh for the whole month this August. So I had a lovely gig on the hottest day of the year in the Cow. It was packed and it was sweltering, and underneath my Jane Austen dress I could just feel a sweat dripping down my legs.
No one wanted to hug you that night, I'm
sure.
No.
But then I got, then obviously whatever happens, it's not technically always Jane Austen.
No.
It's with that sort of theme. Then I was fighting a giant toad in that particular show.
I remember that from Mansfield Park, of course, the fighting a giant toad scene.
The chapter titled
Fanny and the Toad.
Fanny and the Toad. So that's just joyous. And alongside doing solo stuff, when you get to do that kind of thing, it just means, yeah, you get to play with your buddies,
yeah,
and be with other people and not come off stage and go on your own
yeah,
or go to the bar straight alone. So it's really nice to do improvised comedy. And I'm doing several shows actually in Edinburgh this year. I'm on standby if any of those guys get ill.
Or
can't be bothered, then I might do the odd Austin. But
when you say ill, hungover,
just sick of the whole flyer thing, out, paper cutted all over.
The death of a thousand paper cuts. Yes, we've all had that.
All been there. I'm also doing a little plug. I'm doing an improvised Enid Blyton novel as well every day.
There we go.
And
now
that's going to be great. And that's actually one of the girls from Ostentatious, Amy Cook Hodgson. Mm-hmm. She has established that with her partner. So I'm one of the members of that.
That's going to attract women of my age in their droves.
Yeah.
Those of us who... So how does it work? See, I've never actually seen Ostentatious. Someone suggested Jane Austen is a funny writer, and I enjoy Jane Austen, but I don't really find her that funny. I do think I probably would find Ostentatious funny, but I don't. You know, it's that kind of, you know, the wry look at Regency society. It doesn't really, not a lot of lols for me.
It's not quite my kind of like Saturday night kind of.
No, it makes
me roll around. But I do appreciate. Strange coming back to it, because I did Sam Austin a little while ago, just straight plays. Mm-hmm. So coming back to it in this format and rereading all the novels and then watching all the BBC adaptations and anything you can get your hands on. I actually kind of realised, being a lady in my 30s and single, I thought this really does... it has something to say.
Yes.
I get every predicament.
The observations of character and
that
situation. And then, well, with Enid Blyton, though, actually, that will be more... That is the thing with Jane Austen. We do have such a sort of, all of us have that storehouse of knowledge of how it should look.
Yes.
And the period drama kind of cliches that you can use, as well as the sort of literary conventions, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Enid Blyton will be interesting because, well, I'm thinking racism immediately.
Yeah.
How much racism is allowed? How do you deal with
that? Well, it's strange. I think that was one of our first rehearsals where we decided there would be no gollywogs.
Yes, I mean,
there'll be none of that.
Do that.
The one thing that you can pick up on actually is her treatment really of women as well, and how in most of the novels it will end with a man saying to a girl, possibly one of the protagonists, one of the children, "Well, you did pretty well for a girl."
Yeah, often.
So we're going to play on that sort of stereotype and draw out the humour and the comedy and see how we can flip that and create exciting adventures, which will be family friendly as well. I think that was the idea. It's at 4 o'clock, so it's open to adults and children, and so it fills a sort of little niche hopefully within
so
the improv.
More famous vibe than Mallory Towers, would you say?
Yeah, I think so. The idea of children going on an adventure, meeting some baddies, and what that might happen, what happens with that. And we get suggestions from the audience of a baddie's name. We've had some cracking ones so far. People do love a muck. They love Mr. McTavervan.
Well, in Edinburgh, I mean, who knows? Yeah. It may be English names.
Well, actually, and we had Michael Gove, of course. And then, exactly, it's a given, beautiful. So then we'll get a location and maybe an object that you want to see within the show, and then we'll try and weave it together and create an exciting adventure, which isn't, of course, strictly pure Enid Blyton.
Enid Blyton canon.
But
kind
in
of
the area of Enid Blyton.
Nice.
And yeah, just to bring back some childhood memories for you. Lots of picnics and bicycles and seasides.
There's so much to do with Enid Blyton, because you could also do a sort of faraway tree style.
Exactly. You go a bit fantasy.
You can go a bit fantasy with it. I mean, I suppose there would be room for a late night Mallory Towers kind of girls in the dorm. I mean, you might attract the wrong kind of men in Mac sort of audience, but it's definitely a thing you could do.
I'd love to. We were talking, we'd quite like to do a midnight version.
Yeah,
and just
Midnight Feast.
Yeah, definitely. So we're going to see how it goes. We're only doing the first 2 weeks in Edinburgh. At the Counting House at 4 p.m.
So
it's a lovely slot. Oh, thank you. It's going to be a really nice test of it. We're already sort of up to speed and we've got the show. So now we want to just go up and see how it fares in Edinburgh, and then hopefully it become possibly something that can tour or come back to Edinburgh next year and just establish ourselves as this is the Enid Blyton novel.
Because children do still read Enid Blyton to this day.
Yeah, they do.
Read The Faraway Tree to our kids, and I'm sure The Famous Five and Secret Seven.
Secret Seven, I used to read all of The Secret Seven. Because you've got sort of the Jackie Wilsons and that sort of thing, Jacqueline Wilson which sort of is that modern Enid Blyton. And I did quite a lot of Jacqueline Wilson. I did a children's production of that and toured for about 10 months doing that. And talking of misconstruing a title, that one was called Bad Girls, and we did get the odd lone man in the audience who had really not read the poster. I mean, the poster was an animation of two girls just looking fun.
They had read the poster. And
maybe.
Let's not dwell on that. But so you're going to be... So that's at 4 o'clock, yes. The Enid Blyton.
Yeah.
Then your show at the Cowgate Head is...
It's at 8.45.
Okay. And then Ostentatious, if you're called...
Ostentatious, if you're called, is at 1.
Okay.
So that might start my day, but I would imagine it won't be very often. I think those guys will be... They'll be healthy.
Yeah,
please be healthy, because I might not be enough.
Well, no, I'm just thinking if you've got two other shows to do, you might not need
on
that.
My plate. And then I'm also in more shows. I'm also in the Free Association, which is a brilliant no-context, free-form improv group, which has Graham Dixon from Ostentatious in it. Uh-huh. I seem to be just hanging out with all the Austen lot in different guises.
Yeah, well, you know.
And we're at the Pleasance.
It's a big family, isn't it?
It is, and they're lovely. And that's exactly how it feels. Without it sounding disgustingly syrupy, when I step in and just hang with them for a night, they are all absolutely best buddies. And it's just really happy. The dressing room's full of laughs. And, of course, they've been going for 4 or 5 years, so they seem to be... A very jolly lot.
Oh, and it is so to improv as opposed to stand-up. Well, this has been a theme over the weeks, really.
Ah, really?
How much happier and more well-adjusted improv performers are.
The improv scene is the nicest scene I've been in.
Yeah, stand-up.
Oh, dear.
The tales we could tell.
Oh, God.
Anyway, now let's... shall we have a record while I...
We'll have a quick record while you...
Then we'll pop back. Oh. Then we're going to have to go.
Yep.
What record should we have?
We're going to have Pink Sunshine by Fuzzbox.
Oh, God, I tell you, well, I'll talk about this after.
Lucy Porter on FUBAR Radio.
Amanda and I, they're just having to educate Alison Thea Scott about... we've got a fuzz box and we're going to use it, as they were originally called. And oh, how I love them. They used to be on... there was a programme called The Chart Show, which was... In fact, I think it might have been ITV on a Saturday morning. And they used to do The Chart.
Yeah.
Maybe it was Channel 4. No, I think it was ITV. And anyway, and they used to do The Indie Chart. And it was the only place on television that you could see indie music, which was very much my thing. Mm. So I was about... 12, you know, 11 or 12 when I was but like young indie kid.
Yeah.
And and there were never any videos for the indie songs except Fuzzbox.
That's right.
They used to make these really... They were just grunge before grunge existed. They were these girls, I think they're from Wolverhampton, weren't they? They were part of that whole Pop Release Itself kind of thing. Anyway, and they were just these sort of really normal, brilliant girls with crazy coloured hair, and they did these really cheap crap videos. And really, you know, and they obviously learnt their instruments about 5 minutes ago, but they were giving it a go. And this was why they used a lot of Fuzzbox and a lot of pedals, so that you couldn't quite tell that they weren't amazing musicians. But I absolutely loved them. And then they went pop. They suddenly were sort of reinvented as a slick pop outfit called Fuzzbox. And they did a song, Calling International Rescue.
Yeah.
Which was like a big hit. But they were still amazing. I mean, they were still brilliant when they were a pop group.
And when did they disband then?
God, I mean, 1991.
Oh.
I know for a fact that I went to look round the university, well, it was called the Central London Poly at the time, University of Westminster as it is now. And I went to look round Central London Poly with a view to going there. And one of the members of Fuzzbox was there, and she was going to do the same course as me.
Whoa.
Too excited. Anyway.
Wow.
My Fuzzbox story. I've used up all the time that we had left to us talking about Fuzzbox. Anyway, if they're out there,
I'm going to Google them.
I love you guys. Now, so at the end of the show, I've got a bit of pretzel lodged in my throat.
As it should be.
A bit more emotional. I mean, I'm emotional anyway. Because it's been lovely. It's been amazing. I want to thank Shayla Rose. She's not here, but I want to thank her. And I especially want to thank Alison Thea Scott.
Thank you so much, Lucy.
It's been about Celine Dion. And Celine. That's the most important. Thanks. And if people want to see you being, amongst other things, Celine Dion cupping Michael Bolton's balls.
Indeed.
Where? Tell me all the news.
Okay. I got two more London previews. Go on. I've got the 29th of July, next Wednesday, and that's in Farringdon. And the first.
Is it the Betsy Trotwood?
The Betsy Trotwood.
I love
that
good.
Venue. Done lots of previews there. It's been delightful. Mm-hmm. And then I have one more at the Museum of Comedy. But go to my website, www.alisonthiascott.com, or find me on Twitter.
Vocal coaching also supplied. Vocal coaching. If you need it. Brilliant. And and all your other things in Edinburgh will be on there.
All there, yeah.
We can find you.
Yes, please do.
And yeah, we will. So thank you very much. And thank you to Amanda Redman. As always, a fragrant delight.
Thanks very much.
And we'll be back next week, I think, before our summer hiatus. We're going to have one more show next week.
Right. Yeah.
Super.
Good. Lovely. Everyone have a nice week, won't you? See you next week. Bye.
Sweat dripping from my body. We both at this party. So come and show me your move.